720 WGN. It is 3:17. Elise Klink joins us every Friday. Elise, were you lucky enough to see the Rolling Stones concert last night, or did you watch the debate? Oh, wait. I don't have her up. Let me find her. Are you there?
I am.
Okay. So what were you doing last night?
Well, I wished I had seen the Rolling Stones, but I was actually doing a presentation for college students on financial wellness and well-being.
Oh, that's a good time to catch them, because that's when they get all the credit card solicitations.
That's right. So this is part of Best Money Moves, our financial wellness company, and we engaged with a group of students from across the country who are going into the medical field. They're college students, and they're getting ready to choose their post-collegiate careers, and this is something that was offered to them, and they took advantage of it.
Oh, that's lovely. Okay, so inflation was a topic of the debate last night, and I know that's part of what you wanted to talk about today. Not the debate, but, you know, what we're dealing with.
No, I'm going to take a pass on that. But I will say that good news on the economy is that the inflation rate seems to have come down a little bit more, 2.6% in May, down from 2.7%. So this is sort of stepping back to where the Federal Reserve is hoping to see it, which is around 2%.
Well, that's good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it means that the Fed might actually lower interest rates in September. I think that they take a break now for the summer, and then when they come back, I think that economists are going to be hoping, and maybe even betting, that they're going to feel confident enough about the fact that the economy is slowing down to where they want it to be, that they will take the chance and lower interest rates. That would be a really good thing for the housing market, for people who carry credit card debt, and anybody who wants to buy a car.
Yeah. I saw in your notes that in a recent Gallup poll, just 21% of Americans said it was a good time to buy a house. Tied for the worst reading in Gallup history, they said an overwhelming majority, 76%, say it's a bad time to buy. But you know what? John Williams had his bright side, and there were three or four people that just bought a house this week.
Well, you know, people do have to move. You know, you get a new job, you got to move. You have kids and you don't have room, you need to be in a different school district, you're going to move. Your dog needs more space in the backyard, you're going to move. So there are reasons that people end up moving and selling homes, and that's good. And we are still selling some homes. The problem is that for the vast majority of people who want to buy, many of them are in their, you know, late 20s, 30s, and 40s. They literally can't buy because the combination of high interest rates and rising home prices, something that we've never seen before in all these years, have those two things move together upwards at the same time. And that's causing a lot of consternation. And so I'm not surprised that 3/4 of Americans think it's a bad time to buy. On the flip side, a whole lot of people aren't moving simply because 2/3 of Americans still have interest rates on their loans of around 4% or less. And so they think, well, if I move, I'm going to have a higher interest rate and I have to pay more for the house. Why would I do that?
Yeah. And David Hochberg always says when he's in here, marry the house, date the interest rate. Because, of course, in his business, his thought is that you can refinance somewhere down the line.
Yes, he's exactly right. So in all the years that I had a mortgage before I paid it off, Sam and I would get adjustable rate mortgages, and those typically go for less than a fixed rate loan. And every time the interest rate went down again, we would refinance again. It went down. We refinanced all the way down from where we started, which was 11.75%. That was years and years and years ago. All the way down, I think our last interest rate was 2.5%.
Right. My gosh. And what we're finding now, though, is that when a house does hit the market, there are multiple offers and the price they're getting per square foot is just crazy because house prices continue to rise.
Yeah, that's exactly true. It is really hard to imagine just how high and how fast home prices have risen. Now, that said, it's that way everywhere but Chicago, it feels like. Yeah. Where in the city, what we're seeing now are more homes on the market. Homes are taking anywhere between 3 and 6 months to sell. You're seeing, especially in the downtown area, Streeterville, River North, just a real slowdown. People are worried about being in those neighborhoods. They're worried about what it's like after dark. They're worried they want to be safe walking around. And so those homes are taking a little bit longer to sell, and the older buildings are taking sort of on the longer side than the newer buildings. So people are trading off sort of space, which you would get in an older building, for modern, very, very modern amenities like really cool health clubs and swimming pools and dog walker places and all kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, people of a certain age don't care about the neighborhood, the concern about how safe it is, because they just want to be in a good space close to the city. So I think those neighborhoods do evolve and change, and maybe that's where we are.
Well, I think they do, and I think they're going to evolve and change again. I'm very excited to see what happens when Google opens up the renewed State of Illinois building, which will now be called the State of Google building, I guess. And you've got 1,000 or 2,000 Googlers all working downtown, wanting to live close to downtown and take advantage of that. I think, you know, you're going to start to see a rejuvenation of the downtown of Chicago, which, by the way, compared to other major city downtowns, we're actually doing pretty well. And that's encouraging, I think, especially after what we've been through the last 4 years.
The Google effect is huge. I have friends in the Seattle and Kirkland area. One is near Google. She bought a townhome for $475,000. It's about 1,200 square feet. Google moves in, $1.2 million now.
Yeah, and I think you're going to start to see more of that in the neighborhoods that are walkable to downtown. And with that, you know, these are very high-paid people, right? Even the people who aren't the supreme coders get paid a lot, and they get stock options. And after a few years, you've got, you know, people with a significant amount of wealth that are, you know, looking for places to live. They can afford to pay, and they do pay for privilege. They pay for access, and they pay for close commutes. They pay for nice restaurants and a lot of other things that we all enjoy in the city. And that's a good thing. And so I see that opening up in the next couple of years. And I think that's going to be another force for good change for us.
Uber and Lyft drivers are going to be paid more, huh?
Yeah, this is interesting, if you're in Massachusetts, of course. So there's been some legal back and forth in Massachusetts about an hourly minimum standard pay for Massachusetts drivers of Uber and Lyft. And there's a settlement where Uber and Lyft on Thursday, yesterday, agreed to a $32.50 hourly minimum pay as standard for the drivers of those two companies. And they're also going to pay $175 million to settle a lawsuit that basically said that they treated drivers as independent contractors as opposed to employees. And this has been watched, I think, around the world, actually, as you've seen different countries in Europe look at Uber drivers and Lyft drivers and say, nope, those are employees. You got to treat them like employees. And in the United States, I think you're going to see more of that as well.
Yeah, $32.50 an hour, plus you get the tips, that you might be doing fairly well then.
Well, that translates to about $65,000-$67,000 a year, which is about the median income.
Denmark is fining cows.
You know, I'm always looking for something fun to give you on a Friday afternoon. Yeah, so it turns out there's a company called CoreLogic, which does real estate data, and I found out last week at the National Association of Realtors Conference, Real Estate Editors Conference, excuse me, that they assigned a climate change cost to each house, right? So your house has X number of dollars, and you pay that in the form of insurance. Well, now, in Denmark, dairy farmers are going to pay a carbon tax on their livestock, and it's going to cost them $100 a cow.
Wow. That's a lot, because I know, I don't know about what's happening in Denmark, but in America, the profit is razor thin for producers.
It sure is. And this is an annual tax. And this is to, I don't know if you're supposed to try and tell your cows to hold it in or something.
That's right.
I don't
know what
you're supposed to do. But it is, it's interesting that they're looking at a carbon tax on agriculture. The reason they're doing that, of course, is because agriculture creates such massive pleat emissions. Cows, of course, but even just the way that we grow grain sometimes, or the way that we do grow other kinds of livestock. And so what they're trying to do is get the farmers to figure out a better way.
That's awesome. Tell everybody how to find you, how to sign up for your newsletter.
Yeah, Love Money and Real Estate. That's the name of my newsletter, and you can find me at thinkglink.com.
She's the best. That's Elise Glink. Steve's News next on 720 WGN.
Lisa Dent, WGN.